in chapter 9, especially for chapter 7 through 9, actually, devotional service has been explained. And Krishna himself, at the end of chapter 9, has spoken so sweetly, so powerfully, and has practically opened up his heart to Arjuna and describing how he cares for his devotees. Now this knowledge, the knowledge of 9, and also the knowledge that Krishna will speak in 10, is especially meant to generate and increase one's faith and devotion. To especially, for the purpose of increasing devotion, Krishna now in chapter 10 will describe his opulences. Again, Arjuna was so happy to hear Krishna's statements at the end of chapter 9 that Krishna will begin speaking again. He will speak his knowledge again without having been asked. Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhuya Eva Mahabaho. So Bhuya means again, I will speak this to you. In the beginning of the 9th chapter, Krishna has spoken Raja Vidya Raja Bhuyam. So this king of knowledge about Krishna's position, Krishna's opulence, will be spoken Bhuya again, for the purpose of increasing Arjuna's devotion and increasing our devotion. So, Bhuya Eva Mahabaho Srinu Me Paramam Vacha. Srinu Me means hear from me. Paramam Vacha means my supreme words. Yatteham Priyamanaya. Priyamanaya means I'm thinking you very dear to me. Priya. Priya means very dear. So because priyosi me sakacheti, Krishna said in the 2nd chapter, because you are my dear friend, because you are dear to me, because of my affection to you, I'm going to speak this to you because out of affection I want auspiciousness for you. I want the best thing for you. So you hear this, Srinu me, you hear this from me, because you are so dear to me, I'm going to tell you this knowledge that is so wonderful. Why? Because it will increase your devotion, and that is the only auspicious thing that can actually happen to one, that one's devotion can be increased. And it is Vakshami, Amhita Kamyaya, listen carefully, because it is for your benefit. Now Krishna has already told Arjuna's qualification. I will speak this to you, Pravyaksha Anasuyave, in chapter 9, that Arjuna is not envious of Krishna. So Krishna in this chapter is going to explicitly clear. Now Krishna has already told Arjuna's qualification. I will speak this to you, Pravyaksha Anasuyave, in chapter 9, that Arjuna is not envious of Krishna. So Krishna in this chapter is going to explicitly, clearly state his position, not to glorify himself, but for Arjuna's benefit. So Arjuna will clearly understand who Krishna is, and that he himself should surrender at the lotus feet of Krishna. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, listen again, O mighty armed Arjuna. Because you are my dear friend, for your benefit, I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. So this chapter is called The Opulences of the Absolute, or Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti means opulences. Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport.
I want to tell you some rahas.
Previously, beginning with the seventh chapter, the Lord has already explained His different energies and how they are acting. Now in this chapter, He explains His specific opulences to Arjuna. In the previous chapter, He has clearly explained His different energies to establish devotion in firm conviction. Again, in this chapter, He tells Arjuna about His manifestations and various opulences. The more one hears about the Supreme God, the more one becomes fixed in devotional service. One should always hear about the Lord in the association of devotees. That will enhance one's devotional service. Discourses in the society of devotees can take place only amongst those who are really anxious to be in Krishna consciousness. Others cannot take part in such discourses. The Lord clearly tells Arjuna that because Arjuna is very dear to Him, for His benefit, such discourses are taking place. Krishna will... He has already spoken about the demigods in chapter 9 and in chapter 7. Now Krishna will finish His points about the demigods here. And that the main point that He will explain is that He is the source of the demigods. It is the same point. The demigods have power. They are able to benedict living entities with health, wealth, house, and so on. Many, many opulences. Different people who are materialists, but which power through almost a spiritual way. They do tantric siddhis, and they try to get different powers from the demigods. You can get power empowered from the demigoddess Tara, and so much wealth will come from you. You can get power from Lord Shiva, and you will get the ability to be a great doctor. You can get power from Ganesh, and so many auspicious things will happen to you. So different demigods, as explained in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, can award so much power. Therefore, how much more powerful is the source of their power? They all have some vibhuti or opulence. But Krishna is the source of all their opulence. One person is the source of all these thousands and thousands of demigods' opulence. So how powerful and opulent must be that person, Krishna? Neither the host, text 2, of demigods, nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. So it is so hard, it is difficult to actually understand Krishna's position. Why? Because He is the source of everything and everyone. Just like if we hear about our father's boyhood, his childhood, from him, when he was 5 years old, when he was 6 years old, when he was 8 years old, or 10 years old, sometimes our parents will tell us about what they were doing when they were little boys or little girls. And we can hear that. And we can understand what their source was, what their parents were like, what their childhood was like. But otherwise, other than by hearing from them, we have no other way that we can understand. We have no other way that we can understand other than by hearing from them. So similarly, the demigods, we cannot hear from the demigods about Krishna or His origin. Or His opulence. Nor can we hear from the sages. Why? Because Krishna is the source of the demigods and sages. The demigods cannot understand Krishna. But if Krishna, by His mercy, speaks about Himself, then and only then can he be understood. So one can say that the demigods can't understand Krishna because they are Sakam devotees. And that is the reason they have material desires. But also the sages can't understand Krishna. No one can understand. Even Brahma, the source of all the sages. And they were born out of his mind. The seven sages were born out of the mind of Brahma. They cannot understand Krishna. He cannot understand Krishna. Because in every case, even though the sages aren't Sakam devotees, even though they have no material attachments, they cannot know Krishna on his opulences or his source, because Krishna is the source of those beings. So the only way to understand about Krishna is if we hear from him by his mercy. Now Krishna will explain something about himself. And this is the result of knowing about who Krishna is. Yomam ajam anadim sha veti loka maheshwaram asamudha samartyeshu sarvapapai pramuchyate. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted amongst men, is freed from all sins. Krishna has explained this in the fourth chapter. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata. What's the next slide? Tatvadeham punar janma naiti mam eti so arjuna. So if one knows Krishna in truth, his birth, his janma, his karma, understanding that Krishna is the son of Vasudev or the son of Yasoda, that he is a transcendental person. He is unborn. He is not taking his birth. Yomam, Krishna says, Yomam ajam. He points to his chest and says, because someone can say, oh, I know who you are, Krishna. You are Brahman. You are the unmanifest Brahman, formless and formless and qualityless. And you have come down and taken your birth in Sattva-gun, and appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. But Krishna says, no, no, no. Yo mam, Aja. No, you are wrong. Me, I am Aja. It is not that I have taken my birth. I am not Brahman taking my birth in Sattva-gun. Yo mam, Aja. Ajam. I am unborn. You should know that I am unborn. But someone can say, well, not only are you unborn, but Brahma is born, unborn. So therefore Krishna says, Yomam Aja, because Brahma's name is Aja. Yomam Ajam Anadim Sha. Although Brahma is unborn, still he has an end and he has a beginning. Although he is unborn, he comes from the lotus navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So he is without a beginning and without an end. Krishna is. So he is different from Lord Brahma. And not only that, Veti Loka Maheshwaram, although one can say that the demigods are Loka Maheshwaram, but they are not Aja and they are not Anadim. And the sages who were mentioned before, they are Aja. They are unborn, but they are not Loka Maheshwaram, and they are not Anadi. So only Krishna fulfills all the characteristics that he's mentioned here. Not the sages, not the demigods, not even Lord Brahma are in this position that Krishna is in. And one who knows Krishna as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, he alone, undiluted amongst men, is freed from sin. So, again, this is knowing Krishna in truth, knowing his actual position, that he is the son of Devaki, the unborn, by his own atma mayaya, by his own internal energy, has taken birth, or it appears that he's taken birth. By his own internal energy, the unborn appears to take birth. So this is glorious knowledge. And the only way to understand this is to hear from Krishna. Text 4 and text 5. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind. These are all glorious qualities, especially buddhya jnanam asam moha, intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion. These qualities are necessary to know anything. You need intelligence to know something. You need knowledge, you need background knowledge, and you need the ability to get knowledge, to know something. And you have to be free from delusion, and you have to be free from doubt to know something deeply. So these are the qualities that are mentioned here. They're all glorious qualities. And they are qualities that are used to gain things, especially to gain knowledge, intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the different qualities of living entities, be they good or bad, are all created by Krishna. And they are described here. Because these qualities of being created by Krishna cannot be used to know Him. He is beyond our knowledge. We cannot know Him. This point has come up many times in the Bhagavad Gita, that this knowledge of Krishna is different from knowledge within the material world. It is knowledge beyond the three modes of material nature. It is descending into the material world by Krishna's grace, by His internal energy. This knowledge descends through parampara. This was explained also in chapter 4. There is no other way to understand knowledge about Krishna except by hearing from Krishna through the parampara and through the shastra. So these qualities cannot reveal Krishna. Even if one is a great meditator, full of knowledge, renounced from all sense gratification, sitting in the forest, he still, without hearing, cannot understand Krishna. Nor can he just hear from the sages who have not heard it from another sage, who has not heard it from another sage, who has heard it from ultimately from Krishna. So neither the sages, nor the demigods, nor qualities, no matter what our situation is, there is no other process for understanding Krishna other than hearing about Him. So therefore, in this verse again, in chapter 10, in chapter 9, right in the beginning, and in chapter 7, Krishna says, Shrinu me paramam vacha, you hear the supreme words. I will tell you even more, but you listen carefully, Krishna tells Arjuna. Because by hearing, by Krishna glorifying this knowledge, just like in the first three verses of chapter 9, Krishna glorified this knowledge, telling Arjuna how important it is, so that Arjuna would wake up, open his ears, and listen carefully. Here, this is so important what I'm going to tell you now, Krishna said. There is no other way to understand me. And not only that, I am telling you this because you are my Priyatama. You are so dear to me. You are dear to my heart. So this is good for you. It is auspicious. It will increase your devotion. So listen carefully, Krishna tells Arjuna. Prabhupada explains in the last small paragraph of the purport. Of whatever we find, good or bad, the origin is Krishna. Nothing can manifest itself in this material world which is not in Krishna. That is knowledge. Although we know that things are differently situated, we should realize that everything flows from Krishna. Now, Krishna will explain more on this point over here. He's already actually explained this point just before in text 3. Excuse me, text 2, that the demigods and sages cannot know him.
So he's going to explain about the sages here, why they can't know him. The seven great sages, and before them, the four other great sages. Who is the four? Who are the four other great sages?
Sanatana.
One, two.
Sanatana.
Yes.
And
that's gonna be five.
And what's
his
name? Shanagas. Sanatana.
Yes, Shatu's son, the four Kumaras, who are great sages. And the Manus. So there are 14 Manus, 4 Kumaras, 7 sages, 25. They all came from Brahma. And they come from me, born from my mind. And all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So because they are born from Krishna, they cannot understand Krishna's source unless they hear from him. The 4 Kumaras were such powerful sages that they had the ability. They were born from Brahma's mind. They did not want to procreate in this world. Brahma, after getting the inspiration from Krishna, actually, after seeing Vaikuntha, and after knowing, by Krishna's mercy, how to create the world, he began creating the progenitors, those who he wanted to increase the population of the universe. So one of the first creations were these Chatusanas, the 4 Kumaras. So they refused to get entangled in material life, and they went off. After some time, these 4 were so powerful that they went off, and they were fixed in Brahmagyan, and they went off to Vaikuntha. And they went through 6 different gates. They wanted to see Lord Narayan. They went through the different gates into Vaikuntha, and then when they got to the final gate, and they were stopped by Jayan Vijay. And they became, and these 4 Kumaras became very upset with Jayan Vijay for not letting them in. Jayan Vijay also one time wouldn't let Lakshmi Devi in, and she said, they told her that that the Lord is sleeping now, you can't go in and see him. And she also got very upset with them, and she said, you two will fall down because you keep people out. We want to see the Lord. So even Lord Narayan, he noted after the Jayan Vijay were cursed by the 4 Kumaras. He previously predicted that they would fall down. But these sages, they were fixed in Brahman consciousness. They were fixed in the absolute. Their minds had nothing to do with matter. Their minds were unagitatable. And yet, when Krishna heard or understood, or Lord Narayan understood what had happened, that the gatekeepers, Jayan Vijay, had kept out the 4 Kumaras, he came on his own 2 soft lotus feet, he walked there. And he began apologizing to the sages. And the sages, these 4 Kumaras, caught the breeze of Vaikuntha, blowing the tulsi from the garland of the Lord and from the Lord's lotus feet. The fragrance of the tulsi came and touched the nose of the Kumaras, and their minds became disturbed, and it immediately took them out of their Brahmagyan, out of their Brahman consciousness. Because nothing material could move their minds. They were fixed in oneness. But the fragrance, they weren't even directly smelling the tulsi, but they were getting the tulsi coming from the breeze. And that, just that alone, going into their nostrils, it increased their Krishna consciousness so much that he cried in personal realization. And these, the Kumaras, are the leaders of all the impersonalists. They are the gurus of the impersonalists, and they rejected this impersonal realization to become bhaktas of Lord Narayan. So even these great sages who were so powerful, they are overwhelmed by the Lord of Vaikuntha. They are so pure, they are so powerful, they are there from the very beginning of creation. And yet again, they are overwhelmed by the Lord of Vaikuntha. They are overwhelmed just by the tulsi the fragrance of the tulsi as it touched their nostrils, so they also cannot understand. They cannot understand on their own about Krishna. They're all born from Krishna. And that is why they cannot know him in the source. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So this knowledge, again, of Krishna's opulences fixes one in devotion. So 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in this chapter, they discuss Krishna's opulences and the lack of anyone's ability to actually understand Krishna's position without hearing in the succession. And the result of this, if one hears properly, without envy, with faith, the result will be pure devotional service. Because one will understand Krishna's position, that he is the Supreme, and that we cannot be happy without his mercy. We cannot be happy by our own endeavor. It is impossible. We try unlimited times to become happy, but we cannot. We imagine so many circumstances that will make us happy, but they do not. But by becoming fixed in pure, unalloyed devotional service, in that way, we can come in contact with the spiritual energy, or rather the spiritual energy comes in contact with us, and thereby we actually do become happy. We complete ourselves, because we are part and parcel of Krishna, and in illusion we are imagining that we are separate from Krishna. And just as if we pull a branch off of a tree, that branch will dry up. It cannot flourish. The juices cannot flow within it. So similarly, without our connection to Krishna being established in our consciousness, we cannot be happy. We cannot be happy. So the process of establishing that is the same as the goal. It is called devotional service, or bhakti, bhakti yoga, or abhideya. This is one of the glories of devotional service, that the same thing that one does in sadhana, he does in siddha, in his perfection. He glorifies Krishna, he serves Krishna. There is no change, except what changes is one's consciousness and one's awareness of and one's love. One becomes Krishna conscious, naturally Krishna conscious, and one's, the intensity of one's focusing of one's mind on Krishna becomes increased. And then the living entity in the siddha state lives always with Krishna. And there is no chance of him engaging in material activities, because he is connected with Krishna. Are there any questions about any of this? It's quite a simple beginning of the chapter.
Who are the seven sages?
Oh, I can't remember their names. It's in the Marichi.
Vrigo
is one.
No.
Yeah.
You need not announce it.
No, who?
Marichi Angira Bhakti.
Yes.
Lusto Pulabo Krutu.
Vrishisto. Like a Bengali accent, too. These are the seven. Did you hear?
Yeah.
Where is Bhrigu?
Bhrigu was born from the Yagrami of Brahma.
From
not
the?
From mind.
Uh-huh.
He was being on Yagra, from the higher Bhrigu.
And these seven sages all obtain wives from Kardama Muni. Yes?
Who's Muni?
Kardama.
Kardama.
Yes, I'm just reading this in the third chapter.
So the example is these four Kumaras, they are fixed in Brahma again, then they are converted to devotees. Now, should they be Goswami be considered another very important example?
Yes, theoretically, but no, actually.
Why?
Because he is
He is Srimati Radharani's Sukh. That is why.
But he was reading Samsara immediately after this bhakti.
Right, but that's why, yes. But actually, Jiva Goswami explains in Gopal Champu that story. Did I ever tell that story of how the birth of Sukadeva Goswami? You know that story? From Gopal Champu.
He was born and immediately he was leaving.
Yeah, but there is
he was brought back.
There is big rahasya behind this.
The two shlokas that were sent behind him, the two disciples of that faith, that brought him back.
Yeah.
And converted him.
But
he should not be considered one like our co-kumaras.
But there is a reason why he became so attracted when he heard that oho pakiyam sanaka that we've done. That verse and the other one. Bahar pidam natavara vapu kanayo kanikaram. Yeah. Kambam dhanalum dhananam bhakti. Yes. But there was a reason why he was so attracted. Now here's the reason that Jiva Goswami explains in Gopal Champu. I explained this on Madhastami, actually, but there's a little more. That Srimati Radharani had a parrot in Braj. And she would take that parrot and keep the parrot on her left hand, and she would feed him pomegranate seeds from her own hand. And she would say, Bolo, 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 Bolo. And he would chant Krishna's name so sweetly. Then one day, although Srimati Radharani was so attached to that parrot, the parrot flew away from Barshana to Nandagaon. And Krishna was there with his sakas, and he perched himself on one tree, and he began chanting Krishna's names, just as he would chant them to Radharani. He began chanting Krishna's names so sweetly. And Krishna looked and saw this beautiful parrot singing, chanting Krishna, 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 Krishna. And then the Sukh began to say, I am so unfortunate and so foolish that I have flown away and left my mistress. Now, later on, after this event, once the wife of Lord Shiva, I'm not sure who it was at that time, whether it was Lord Shiva's wife. She asked Lord Shiva to explain to her the glories of Krishna. This is from Gopal Champu. So Lord Shiva said this Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto, is very intimate knowledge. So I will not tell you where there is anyone around. We will just go to our place in Kailash. So they went, traveled up to Kailash, up into the mountain, and there was no men allowed there. So when this Sukh heard that Lord Shiva, somehow he found out that Lord Shiva was going to describe the glories of Krishna, he decided that he would go along. Even though he was Sukh, he was not Sati. He was not Sati bird, he was Sukh, he was male, not female. So he flew along and he sat in a tree. So Lord Shiva began singing the glories of Krishna, and he began talking intimately about Krishna's pastimes, starting in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, and then speaking more and more about Krishna. And at some point, he closed his eyes in meditation, and he began visualizing the glorious pastimes of Krishna and relating them to his wife. But his wife, unfortunately, as sometimes happens in a Bhagavatam class, she fell asleep. But still, Lord Shiva was speaking, he was very excited, and he kept on hearing a verse, oh, how nice, keep speaking, yes, 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 very nice, keep speaking, Sukha, Sukha was speaking like that. So Lord Shiva became so inspired because he was seeing all this, and he had such a good audience who was so appreciative of his speech. And then after he was finished, he opened his eyes and he saw his wife was sleeping the whole time. But yes, he still heard. Yes, keep speaking. It is so nice. Speak more. And then he looked all around to try to find who it was. And he saw there was one parrot sitting. And he became very angry because there was no one. He didn't want anyone else around. And secondly, this parrot was a male parrot. There were no male parrots around. So he began to get very angry at this parrot. And the parrot thought, I think it's time for me to leave now. So Lord Shiva began to chase him. And he began flying and flying and flying. And he chased him. And he flew and flew and flew. And Lord Shiva kept chasing him. And he flew and flew and flew. Until he got to the place where Vyasadeva was sitting with his wife. And Vyasadeva's wife opened her mouth and the parrot flew right in. And he stayed there many years. 100 years, I think. And he came out as Sukadev Goswami. Our Sukadev, the speaker.
Ah,
acha. This is wonderful, isn't that? Amazing.
Where from Jiv Goswami got this?
I don't speak Bengali. So you speak in Aspen.
You don't tell me.
He got this? Nandu? Where did he get it from? Bolo?
He
is there. You know, Krishna reveals everything there. So it is. So many times it is said, Sriya Suk. This is the Suk of Sri, of Srimati Radhika. So therefore he was so attractive. Now this explains many things. There are many times, as soon in any time when Sukadev Goswami, when he by accident mentions the name of Radharani, he gets very agitated in mind, he changes the subject due to disturbance.
But what is it that converted him, the parrot, into a jnani?
The Leela was the parrot into what? The day? Into a jnani? Okay.
He was
never really.
He was born as a jnani. Really
this is the Leela. This is my.
Not much of tangible reason behind this.
Goswami is our acharya. You don't like this story?
I do like.
But it defies logic. It is a fact. It defies logic. How the parrot can go in the mouth and come out.
And the wife of the parrot says, take a barn vegetable. Roasted or otherwise. Anyway, I'm wasting your time.
It is an amazing story. Yes. Shriya Sukha. Any other questions?
Yes, would you like to explain to me why it was the reason the parrot get disturbed as soon as he hear our Radharani?
Because he went into ecstasy whenever he would say Radharani's name. That is one reason why he would not speak Radharani's name directly in the Bhagavatam. Because he would go into ecstasy for 6 months. He would be stunned. And Maharaj Pariksit only had 7 days to live. This is explained in the Puranas.
And but it was written by Vyasa. Why did he not mention in his writing? It explains Sudhes from that. Not to utter that name. Very well. They are still from writing that name in history.
But there's another reason too. But first of all, this is coming through the mouth of Sukha. So exactly, the Bhagavatam was spoken so many times and expanded so many times.
No, originally it was written by his father.
Right. Maitreya. Because first of all, there is the Parokshavad reason.
What is it?
Parokshavad. That things that are very intimate, they should be spoken indirectly.
One specially favorite book. It was carried by Krishna. It's so good.
Very, very intimate. But in other Puranas, Brahma Vivarta Purana, and other Puranas, Srimati Radharani's name is spoken directly. Even about Radhakund is spoken directly. It's said that as Radhakund, as Srimati Radharani is the dearest amongst the gopis, similarly her kun, Radhakund, is the dearest of places. So it is spoken in different places. But in the Bhagavatam, which is the highest, in the Bhagavatam, which is the highest of Puranas, Amala Puran, there it is spoken indirectly.
Indirectly? Not that word
Radha
was ever mentioned.
No, it is there. Anayo Aradita Nunam Bhagavan Hari Ishwara Yam No Vahaya Govinda Pitta Yam Anayo Raha. So it is there. The one who worships Krishna the best, Anayo Aradita Nunam, certainly. Certainly. But this girl who Krishna has taken away must have worshipped Krishna the best.
Special relationship.
Otherwise, why would he take it?
It
is there. Aradita. So it is there, but it is hidden. It is hidden from the eyes and the ears of those who should not hear. But especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the other great acharyas, they have opened everything. But especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Otherwise, the Mayavadis, unqualified people, they will be so blasphemous. They will think so many things. Huh? Which? Story?
Srila Prabhupada says in the third part of verse 3 that one who can come to the understanding that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the proprietor of everything being born, is the most successful spiritually realized person. In that state only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one be free completely from all sinful reactions. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions here that when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one fully understand Krishna's supreme position? Or who can understand Krishna's supreme position?
But we should be encouraged to understand Krishna's supreme position as fully as possible. We can never understand Krishna completely. But the point here is Krishna's supreme position, Krishna as Bhagwan. One understands Krishna's supreme position. Where is this? Which part of the verse? Which part of the purport?
It's in the first paragraph. It's in the middle of the first paragraph.
Excuse me?
One should not try to understand Krishna.
Yeah.
Sixth line in the first paragraph.
2, 4, 5. How come I can't find it? On page 506, where? But out of those who actually try to understand the spiritual situation there? Where?
Yes, that's right.
In that state only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, Krishna's position, fully understood that he is Bhagavan, a person. That's the idea. That he is a person with a transcendental body, and having a form does not limit him, and that we're meant to establish, we as eternal souls are meant to establish our eternal relationship with him. Like that.
Does anyone know him fully?
No. He's too tricky. You can't know him fully.
He doesn't even know himself.
Yeah, when he looks in the mirror, the polished stone or the grass, he becomes attracted and says, how is this possible? He is so beautiful. I myself am attracted to this form. But to understand how Krishna's understanding of himself is not possible for us little insignificant souls. But the more we hear, the more we know. And this hearing will develop, more than knowing, it will develop love. That is the point. The point is not to know, the point is to love Krishna. But Krishna's mercy descends to us in the form of knowing or knowledge. and by that knowledge builds devotion. But it's the devotion. Even the gopis, it's not, we sometimes say that they don't have knowledge, but they do have knowledge. But their knowledge of Krishna's position is overwhelmed by their affection for Krishna. And sometimes their knowledge of Aishwarya surfaces, just like when you boil milk, you'll see a piece of grass coming to the surface, and then it goes down, and goes down, and then every once in a while it comes up again. So, it's like that with the gopis' knowledge of Krishna's Aishwarya. It appears every now and then. Just like when Krishna had left Vrindavan, and Uddhava came. So the gopis were speaking against Krishna to Uddhava, and they were saying, don't tell us about this Krishna. We know his past lives. We know before he was Rama. And we know that he shot Bali from behind, even though he's a Kshatriya. And we know previously that he was Lord Vamandev. And even though another Bali, Bali Maharaj surrendered to him and gave everything to him in charity, still he was not satisfied, and he tied him up and threw him down to the Patala Sutala planet. Don't tell us about Krishna. We know what kind of character he is. We know his qualities. So this, every once in a while, their knowledge, the fact that they understood him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the unborn, the inexhaustible, the beginningless, it comes to the surface. But because if they were always aware of that, they would not be able to carry on their loving affectionate pastimes with him. So their love is like the heat that forces the grass to go down deep, deep into the milk. So similarly, the knowledge of the gopis that they have of Krishna's Aishwarya is forced down by their just strong, affectionate relationship with him. It pushes it away, but they have it. There was one other question. No? Okay. So tomorrow, yes?
Where is the sloka study in the Srimad Bhagavatam?
Which sloka?
Did you read before from Radharani, but it's called
Anayo Radito Nunam. It's in the 10th canto. Maybe when Krishna leaves the Rasada, he calls them out, he calls the gopis out, and then he disappears. And then the gopis are searching for Krishna. And in that chapter that they're searching for Krishna, it's probably 30. In that chapter where they're searching for Krishna, when they find the footprints in Vamsivad, Krishna's footprints, they follow them. Die, oh brother. Arjuna.